Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Gale Force 9 sues Wizards of the Coast.
Oh.
So back to the legal battles.
Yeah.
And Roll, the new virtual tabletop, early access open to all.
R-O-L-E or R-O-L-L?
R-O-L-E, yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about failing forward in RPGs. So let's start with Gale Force 9. So they wrote, after 12 years of working with Wizards, we find ourselves in a difficult place of having to utilize the legal system to try to resolve an issue we've spent the last 6 months trying to handle between us.
Uh-oh.
With no success. So Wizards is not paying Gale Force 9. And Gale Force 9, basically, they handle a couple of things. But the thing that I guess caused the dispute is the translations. So they do localization for both French and Korean. So the TRPG Club in Korea and Black Book Editions in France, they publish those editions. And Wizards has said they can no longer approve any project as a result of this work. So they complained about the quality of the translations. And that's something, as a freelancer, that's something I've dealt with. If somebody doesn't want to pay, all of a sudden there's a problem with the work.
Right.
Yeah. So who knows what exactly. I mean, I don't think Wizards is having money trouble. It's very suspicious. When
D&D and Magic, I don't know. They're probably scraping the barrel.
Yeah, it was just kind of sad. So, I mean, we're going to have a legal section every week now for Wizards of the Coast. Someone's suing them. Someone's getting sued by them.
They're suing someone. Yeah.
Yeah. So Gale Force 9 defends that there's no problem with these translations. They use contractors too. So they said they're defending the work of their contractors and saying none of the work that we've done warrants this kind of behavior, warrants, you know, a halt of payment. And they also said that if there had been any problems that they would be able to fix this. Right. They, you know, just stopping the payment is not a way to deal with this. Yeah, that's a bit frustrating. So
I wonder what the chain is. Because if Gale Force 9 hires it out to kind of like freelancers to do localization, then Gale Force 9's probably got to approve that.
Right.
And then with a company like WotC, I don't imagine they're just going, yeah, it's fine, without looking at it.
Yes, yes.
And kind of lends evidence. That's just the wrong word, which is why we shouldn't keep doing the legal battles. But anyway, yeah, like Gale Force 9 said, if there had been problems, they would have known about it before.
Mm-hmm,
and so WotC kind of now saying, there's problems, we're not going to pay, kind of seems suspicious. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. And they've been working together for 12 years, and now suddenly there's problems. So I don't know. But Gale Force 9 also got the Dune license, so they are the ones that reissued the Dune board game.
Okay.
They did the redesign of that. So they do decent work, and so I'm wondering, what exactly. And it may just be like one specific thing or—
Oh, maybe.
Who knows?
Or maybe, who knows what kind of contract they have. You know, maybe WotC wants to get out of it and— give localization elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, they maybe found cheaper options and they're just suddenly going to be unsatisfied with that.
We're unsatisfied with the quality.
Yes.
Based on how much we have to pay because we found a cheaper way.
Yeah, right. Yeah. For what we're paying, the quality should be insanely higher. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. And it's a shame. I mean, because it's only going to affect those, you know, international markets. Mm. You know, they're just not going to have translations of those, you know, of those books.
Is that really such a bad thing?
Yeah, they're going to have to. We'll get on it then. All you indie producers, get on your French and Korean translations so you can beat Wizards to the market.
Or alternatively, French and Korean creators, make your own thing.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right. We'll have to subtitle that. And the other thing was Roll. So Roll is kind of branding itself as a dating app for RPG groups or gamers.
Okay.
Roll is an online RPG app. They launched a Kickstarter earlier this year during kind of lockdown times.
Which we're still in.
Yeah, which it's not going away.
Nope.
It's basically a virtual tabletop. And so they have all of the things that we kind of come to know, you know, maps and character sheets and dice rollers and everything. But they're also working to make it a little bit more of a social platform.
Okay.
So that you can find groups, be able to use it specifically to kind of put groups together and then also run your campaigns. And they're trying to make it open to homebrew as well. So making it very flexible. So you're not just having to buy kind of licensed packs or whatever of established games. The tools will work in a drag and drop way to build things for exactly what you want to do.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And their environment, they call the table. That makes sense because it's a virtual table. Right. The early access was offered, of course, to Kickstarter backers. And I think in a very smart move, especially during the times we're in, they just opened it to everyone.
Okay.
So even if you didn't back it.
I mean, after a certain point.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. So you don't have access to all of the features, but you have access to the free features that are going to be tested and to open it up and get people as interested as possible. So kind of, you know, Black Friday, they decided everybody can have early access and they can also then have access to their Black Friday pricing. So they're getting, trying to get people interested. And I think that's a good move, if especially if people are locking back down in Europe and right. North America. This might be a good chance for people to try other things. With the full release, it'll feature a marketplace with exclusive content. And there are also releases planned for their first year of supplements, which will include the RPG Lancer, Masks, and Swordsfall will all be supported. And this app is fully DRM free, so you're not going to deal with rights protections and things. So if you are interested, give that a shot. And the planned launch is May 2021. So that might be a nice option. And I think it's just good to compare. And as like DriveThruRPG is backing what, Astral? Yeah. So there's people getting behind certain platforms. So it's good to decide. I just recently used a little bit of Roll20.
Right.
I mean, maybe I don't know if the paid version is much better. What they give you for free is not incredibly impressive, and had a little technical troubles with microphones and things. So I'm like, it's hard to beat Discord, you know, like just free Discord. That's where people are meeting together anyhow. And you just use a Google whiteboard in Discord. And it's like, you got to do a lot better.
Yeah. The last time I did online gaming, we just used Skype and some kind of like Google Sheet, if that.
Right.
And yeah, Discord's not really my thing because I can't keep up with all the text things, and that's basically all I do. And I've not really looked at the other platforms, but the only online gaming I've done has been with people who are already in my game group. So I'm kind of curious what tools and what safety tools Roll would put in place to make it easier to find new people to add to your group.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, like the kind of the criteria and because you know that a lot of the big platforms, it's just game based. You know, they're just, you know, you're looking and sorting just by game instead of maybe genre or group type, you know, like storytelling or, you know, what. Crunchy.
How would you even categorize that? Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. And if they're saying they're trying to kind of promote like a social group finding thing, yeah, they're going to have to figure that out. They're going to have to kind of crack the search criteria for what people want to do online.
Yeah, interesting. Swipe right on this page. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
that's right.
First thing that pops in my head when you're like, it's a dating site for gamers. Exactly. I'm like, really? Is that what we're going to do? Oh, no. Okay.
Give that a shot if you're kind of bored with what you're doing or you hope there was more out there. It looked okay. The interface looked nice and clean. So it had a decent look. So it might be worth giving that a run. I also wanted to talk a little bit this week about failing forward. Mm-hmm. So when we talked last week about PC RPGs and tabletop and talking about like what one could do and what another couldn't do, or the, you know, influences between the two, that was something that has in more modern RPGs has really become a common mechanic or common concept that people are using to great effect.
That fail forward?
Yeah, failing forward. And if that's something that computers can't do very well, you know, because you have things like save points and things. And so it's just like you have a fail state and then you have a rewind, you know. So you don't like accept your failure so much and use that, have that incorporated into any kind of story or any kind of mechanic.
Well, again, I mean, like video games are kind of, not always, but I mean, you look at early video games and like fail states are, you lose.
Right. Yes.
Like,
it's just game over.
Sorry, you didn't save. Go back to the beginning, right? Do that Mario level over again, right?
Right.
Which is why the speed runs. And I think you, again, I'm not a video game person, but you could do fail forward in video RPGs as long as you write that into the code. And I mean, or like the branching story point, right?
Right.
So it's, I don't really think it's prohibited by the technology, more prohibited by the narrative writing.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't think it could be done, but I don't think people are seeing. And I guess maybe the closest thing that they've done is like the morality mechanics, where you do something bad or you accidentally kill somebody, that is kind of a failure, and it's going to hurt your moral value or your whatever, and you're going to be viewed differently in the game.
Well, I've not played it, and it's been out for a long enough time that I don't think this is spoilers, but Undertale, from what I hear, the kind of indie game, there's a way to beat the game without kind of killing anyone or violence, and that that's interesting. I wonder if one of the approaches to video games, regardless of the type of video game, is the player saying, oh, I messed that up. Let's go back to the earlier save point and do that again and try and get the best, whatever that means for that game, result of whatever task I'm trying to achieve. Where in a tabletop role-playing game, you can absolutely do that, but it requires the player or a player, including the GM, to say, you know what? I messed something up. Or this was not a satisfactory outcome. what do you say we back up to this previous point and do something different?
Right.
Which I kind of did during the Tachyon Squadron game that we're running, only because it went from what I thought was going to be kind of like a one shot to a campaign. Mm. And a part that I felt was rushed, I'm like, okay, let's back up because we can do that better. And everyone said, okay, cool. Unlike a video game where you just got to like hit a button, right? Everyone at the table has to agree that, yes, we want to, for whatever reason, go back and kind of try again, which I think is maybe why failing forward is more popular or becoming more popular in tabletop RPGs, because it's like, well, the outcome of whatever we were doing, our characters, wasn't great, or like we failed it, right? But that doesn't mean you have an end screen that pops up, right? Nope, the game's still going. You can still maybe achieve your objective just in a different way now. And not so much recently, but when Fail Forward first started kind of entering more mainstream TTRPG discussions, I think I was running into people who had a misconception where Fail Forward, people thought Fail Forward meant the PCs can never lose.
Oh, right.
Which, that's not it.
Yeah, right.
Fail forward means like, nope, you failed, but things don't end.
Yes, right.
Kind of keep going, hence the fail forward.
Right. And kind of rolling that failure into a narrative, like making that part of the narrative, and your failure keeps the story moving forward, but it doesn't. Yeah, so that's the thing. And this is, I think you feel it most in combat, maybe the charisma checks and things, or you know, some kind of physical skill check, but you feel it a lot in combat. We were talking about the round where everybody misses. If in those combat rounds, when your attack misses, if there's an immediate consequence other than zero damage, you know, if there would be something like a counterattack, you know, kind of like how war games, like 40K or something, you're doing a melee attack and you miss and there's a counterattack immediately. So you immediately are going to take damage. And some of the systems that use kind of action points and things where you're spending points. So you'd have to spend a point to parry or counterattack somebody, but that means you don't have an attack when it's your turn in the initiative. Things like that do seem to feel like they have more consequence. And so failing an attack roll does feel like, okay, there's something happening and I should think a little bit more carefully about what I'm doing in combat instead of just attack.
Well, I think there's different ways to go about it. Because like way back when I was having a discussion with someone and I think we were talking about like 4E, and it came up that for some games, the consequence is a loss of resources, mostly mechanical.
Right.
In 4E, it was your powers, right? Your daily at will, or in, that was the same thing, at will encounter or daily powers, right? And man, it sucked to like go, okay, this is my chance for the daily power, natural one, right? And you just kind of blew it, right? But it didn't feel great. You kind of felt like a failure. I mean, that game was built around, you decided to use a resource, didn't force you to do it. You've now lost that resource, right? That is the consequence. And it was much more mechanical.
Yeah.
And it was on the more on the table to give it narrative weight, which sometimes I felt really difficult to do in 4E. But even like 5E D&D or kind of traditional hack and slash games, the consequence of that failed roll is now the enemy gets to make an attack and maybe your hit points are going to dwindle, or you wasted a spell slot, or whatever thrice a day power you had. Now you only have two of them, right?
Right.
So I don't particularly like that style of game, but I think there is a style of game where that works.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of counting down.
And in that case, is it fail forward? Well, I guess kind of in combat, right? The combat round where everyone whiffs. Well, not great, but now we have to see what the consequences are. But like you said, some games or game systems where there's sort of an immediate consequence, kind of like PBTA games, which I think I run a lot better, where it's like a certain role on the player's part means I, the GM, get to take a turn. And that feels a lot more immediate, and also kind of takes the sting out of a crappy role, where it's like, oh, I rolled poorly, but now something interesting is going to happen. I probably won't like it, but you know, something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, and I like that failed rolls generate experience in Powered by the Apocalypse. So let's talk a little bit about a couple of newer systems and kind of how they do that. Yeah, so Powered by the Apocalypse, you get a complete, like a, what's the term for your total success, like 10 or above?
I don't know if they all have different nomenclature. You basic one was a strong hit, and a miss.
And so you have success, but with a complication. Yeah. And so that's nice. That's very narrative. So you do what you you get what you want, you know, the attack or whatever test you wanted to pass, but then something not, not in your favor happens. That kind of creates more flavor and more conflict in the story. So I think that that's handled well. And also the idea that your failure is what teaches you. Your failure is what advances you. Your failure is what makes you learn. I like that that's built into that system. That feels right.
It kind of takes a sting out of the role where you're like,
You get something.
you got something from
you
it.
You learned. You got hurt and you learned.
Four more crappy rolls and we level up. Yeah.
right. And so something like the year zero system. Okay. So they have the pushing the roll.
Yep.
So if you fail a roll, you can push it at the risk of damaging yourself or breaking a weapon, ruining your gear.
Or incurring more stress and alien.
Right. Increasing your stress level. So I think that that works well too, because it's not easy, depending on how big your dice pool is, to get that six on your D6s. And so how much are you going to try? And then how are you going to handle that consequence? And then kind of narratively trying to figure out, like, what did you do that actually caused you to, like, dull your sword or take that mental stress, the strain of what you were trying to do, just kind of injured you mentally. So I like that. And I like a lot of the Year Zero do a good job of making consequence to the failure and building it in. So you're failing, it's kind of shaping what's going on, and you're going to have to, it's going to force you to rest or force you to do something differently because you lost something.
I wonder, can a system mechanically reinforce the idea of failing forward? Fail forward, I think, is one of those sort of ideas that require table buy-in or the GM to push. I'm thinking there's a Cthulhu game, and maybe I'm going to get the name wrong. Maybe, like, I think it was made through the Gumshoe system.
Right.
Was it Trail of Cthulhu? Something. It's a mystery game, and I think you had, like, a number of tokens that you could spend throughout the game session to succeed or fail. But the idea was, during an investigation, you are always going to get a clue that points you to the next whatever you have to do. Success or spending those tokens got you better clues or more information.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of the only game off the top of my head that I can think of that has a mechanic that kind of reinforces fail forward. And it wasn't even fail. It's just you are guaranteed to progress the story. Mm-hmm. Just there are options to maybe, giving you more information where you have better choices.
Right. Yeah, I was going to bring that up, because I knew that.
I jumped the gun. Yeah, no, you're welcome.
That's fine. I've read that about Gumshoe, and I don't have any experience playing that system, but I read that especially in investigation stories, if you're just failing roles and you're not uncovering anything, just walking in circles, like you were in the right place, you just didn't succeed with the role that would have asked the right question, that's very
bad design.
Frustrating.
Bad game design, one. Bad GMing, two. Where it's like, you can't hide crucial plot elements behind the paywall of a die roll, right? The plot needs this element to succeed, you got to give it to the players. You just have to give it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that works well. I mean, it will advance. It's just like kind of the quality or like the detail of that information is going to be different. And the same thing with 2D20. I think the Modiphius 2D20 has a little bit of that built into it because using momentum and using kind of each system kind of uses its points differently, but deciding to, I'm failing, but I'm spending this point to kind of, go push past my failure to either succeed or at least alleviate the damage whatever would have happened. So all of the more modern systems are taking that into consideration. And it's interesting because you see, like with OSR kind of gameplay, the DM will just ask you, like, what does that look like when you defeated the villain, when you did this, what does that look like? But they never ask you, what does that fumble look like? What does your complete failure actually look like? And that should be as much a part of the game as well, is describing your failures as much as your successes.
I've found there's an there's an interesting balance as both as a GM and a player from the amount of GM narration for die rolls and player narration for die rolls that I want. Because I've found that an extreme example, if every player roll, the GM says, tell me what that looks like. Tell me what that looks like. Tell me what that looks like. I kind of feel like the GM, you're not doing your job.
You've put
too much of the burden of description on me, where the flip side of that is I don't get to narrate anything, which is kind of unsatisfying. So I've found, for me at least, there has to be a balance between how much each party narrates. Because at a certain point, GM, you got to do something.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And also, that goes along with, like, you know, maybe playing a character that's not optimal for a situation is being able to include their incompetence or their low charisma or whatever in the story and still continue along. It doesn't, like, everyone just doesn't run screaming from their hideous appearance and their inability to, you know, socially interact so that you can actually, like, you know, continue things. And no, I think it does take a certain skill as a game master to make that feel right, to have that the correct balance.
I think a good example of that for me was the Leverage game, mm-hmm. the previous incarnation of a Cortex game, where the whole it was built on the show, the Leverage show, right? And every character in that show had their area of expertise, right? You mm-hmm. kind of divided out that it was like a hitter, hacker, thief, mastermind, and grifter, I think. One of the conceits of the show was you're going to get to do your special thing. Mm-hmm. There's also going to be a complication somewhere in the show that forces you to take on someone else's role that you're not good at.
Right, right.
And the RPG that I thought was really good also went with that. It kind of said the conceit of playing this character is you're going to be able to do your cool thing. You're also going to have to step into the role, and the GM is going to be encouraged to kind of set things up where you also have to do this thing that you suck at.
Mm.
And
yeah, that's good. Yeah.
There were enough kind of metagame mechanics where you could kind of mitigate it. But part of the fun, I thought, was watching a character kind of fumble through this thing that they're not really good at,
right.
It's kind of crucial for success. And that, I guess, bring it back to fail forward. For something like that to work, a crappy role, I think, can't mean heist over.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like, they're on to you. You're all busted. You're in jail now, right?
Right.
Like, it won't work. Like, mm-hmm. it's got to be like, okay, well, the person now looking at you weird because you got that person's name wrong or whatever topic you were talking about, mm-hmm. you just sounded like a complete idiot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's now other people then have to go in and kind of clean up your mess to make sure things progress. But giving them that chance and allowing them to fail forward, I think, is something that allows those kind of games to work.
Mm-hmm. And that's always, I mean, if you're thinking about the session as a TV show, an episode of a TV show, that is a staple of, like, you know, putting someone, like, you know, kind of fish out of water or putting them in an awkward situation to make it interesting. Yeah. To just watch them survive it.
That's if some people want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's a type of, yeah, that's definitely a type of game. Yeah.
I was again thinking of like an early 4E game I was in. One of the players, their idea of fun was kind of just doing the things they were good at.
Mm-hmm.
Which was fighting.
Right.
And when it came to like kind of the social scenes, they made it pretty clear that they just wanted to kind of like the character was there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make them talk.
Right.
Right. And different people have different play styles. Kind of took me a while to figure that out. Cause for a while we would be like pitching softballs to this other player's character. Like, okay, well, do you want to say anything? And it was always, no. And then like, oh, okay. It's because your idea of fun is just kind of the combat.
Right.
And, yeah. Okay. So yeah, people have to be open to it. And if they aren't, maybe don't force it either.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Is like, say, in this game, you know, just thinking as a GM, I'm going to force people out of their comfort zone and to do stuff they don't want to do. That's not going to be a fun session at all.
Unless, like, if everyone agrees to it.
Right, right.
And I would really prefer you force the character out of their comfort zone rather than the player. Yeah, but right, I mean, like, if everyone goes, no, cool, we're in, then cool, you got a game. If a person goes, okay, you know what? Y'all can do that. I'm going to do this other thing. Then,
yeah.
You got to respect that.
Good communication. And also being able to kind of read the table and find out,
which is not an easy skill to do.
Oh, no.
Especially when you're running a game.
Yeah.
And if you could just sit back and, like, watch, then it'd be a lot easier. But if you're also, like,
The stress. Yeah, there's definitely the stress of running the game. Yeah, you can't keep an eye on everybody and everything. Yeah, that's a good point.
I've gotten better at it, having to watch a toddler.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. One eye on everything is like, oh, what's going on up here and here? Yeah.
Don't touch that. Don't stack those dice.
Yeah.
Quit doodling on your character sheet.
Yeah.
So, what do we have on the table? I thought since this is a visual, we have a visual element. I thought we'd...
More packages that arrived in my house.
Nice.
So I got my comp copy of the Cortex Prime Player's Handbook,
mm-hmm.
or actually the Cortex Prime Handbook, which as much as I like Cortex, and I have hopefully words coming up in an upcoming book, this is a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically all the options for previous incarnations of the Cortex role-playing game, sort of presented in this book.
I see.
At the back, there are three settings to kind of show you how the pieces interact that you could actually play with, but it's kind of like Fate.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much we'll give you the tools and the parts, you build your game. I maybe see. Even a bit more so than Fate, because Fate's like, here's our system.
Mm-hmm.
You can plug in whatever you want. Cortex Prime is like, here's our system. And all these additional mods and tweaks to enhance your game, you gotta put it together.
Mm.
Then I also have Good Society, the Jane Austen RPG, which I want to play a lot.
Yeah.
And the expansion. And the card decks, which, wow, I'm not going to bust them out. But those cards are what I want to do with cards and what I tried to do with our Tachyon Squadron game is what they have done.
Really?
Where it's like, okay, you have your sheet.
Mm-hmm.
What's your background? What's your connection? Well, they have the cards for that.
Nice.
To the point where they have made play sets that say, use card number 9, use card number 30 deal out to the players,
right.
Which I thought was really clever. And then they have beautifully illustrated, like, kind of like NPC cards as well.
Nice.
Yeah, that's really nice.
It's just going to be difficult. The linen tablecloth and the bone china
are going to
be the expensive part of that
if
session.
If there is a game to dress up for, it's this.
Right. Nice. Well, very cool. So, yeah, I'll put links to both of those in the description so you can find both of those games. So we'll decorate the table with anything that comes in every week. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HiveMynd. I am sorting magic cards currently into that wacky draft cube.
Nice. Yeah. So more magic in our future. Nice.
Yeah.
And this time drafting. Right?
That's the goal. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good. And if you'd like to find more about the weekly, please visit idleredhands.com. And you can support this podcast on the Patreon. So patreon.com/idleredhands. We'll be back next week doing this exact same thing.
Yeah.
And maybe something different on the table.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And hopefully a different topic or two. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.